Plus 49.
Hello and welcome here at Plus 49. I'm Aline Bacher, the producer of Plus 49, and I'm thrilled to have you with us. This week's episode is packed and perfectly suited for those first real summer days. In our news segment, we look at Potsdam's efforts to diversify its city administration and a new debate around smartphones in school. In our interview, we sit down with Tuba, talking about questions of belonging, identity, and how to navigate a world that moves faster than we often wanted to. And in Ask a German, we're back under the covers. Literally. This time we're asking, what's with German couples and having separate duvets? Is it a secret long-term love or a quiet rebellion against midnight tug-of-wars? Stay tuned to hear the answer. Plus, we dive into Germany's deep-rooted grilling culture, from Kräuterbaguette to Stockbrot, and the obsession behind grill gadgets. So, grab a grilled veggie skewer or a bratwurst and join us for this new episode. Let's dive right into this week's news top stories in Germany. First up, the city of Potsdam is taking new steps to diversify its administration. Following a local parliamentary inquiry, the city has announced a series of measures to increase the number of municipal employees with a migrant background. As of 2022, only 2% of the city employees had migrant heritage, despite nearly 18% of Potsdam's residents having one. Plans now include a dedicated Instagram channel, targeted outreach campaigns, and a mandatory anti-discrimination training for managers and apprentices by 2029. However, no additional budget has been allocated so far, raising questions about implementation. In Berlin, the city is celebrating the success of migrant entrepreneurs. At this year's Vielfalt Unternimmt Awards, all top prizes went to businesses in health, care, and inclusion. Winners included Das Telly, a Moabit-based care service founded by Safiye Ergün, whose staff is 99% women with migrant backgrounds, Greta & Starks, an app offering cinema accessibility tools, and Juhi, a startup matching caregivers with patients via an app. A special prize also went to a physiotherapy practice run by Iranian-born Azadeh Fazidfar, I hope I pronounced that right. And the award highlights both the challenges and a vital contribution of migrants in a labor market that often excludes them, yet urgently needs their skills. Also this week, Education Minister Karim Prien has reignited calls for stricter smartphone policies. She plans to launch an expert commission before summer to explore potential under 14 restrictions, including platform-specific age verification. Critics worry this could place undue responsibility on young users instead of tech platforms. And finally, diabetes care may become more accessible. Devices like Freestyle Libre, used for continuous glucose monitoring, are now reimbursable for most patients with intensive insulin therapy. The system counts as a medical aid, not a drug, and is covered by most health insurers, with no impact on doctors' prescription budgets. That's it for now for your news of the week, but stay tuned for more. Imagine this. It's a warm summer evening. You're strolling through the city or a local park, and suddenly, there it is. That unmistakable smell in the air. Smoky, savory, irresistible. It's grilling season in Germany. Whether it's coming from a back garden in Charlottenburg, a balcony in Kreuzberg, or a disposable grill in Tempelhofer Feld, one thing is clear. Grillen is not just a way to cook. It's a national pastime. Grilling has long outgrown its seasonal roots. While April to October remains peak time, millions of Germans now grill year-round, rain, snow, or sunshine. And while the classic image of the German griller may still be a middle-aged man with a Holzkohlegrill and a beer in hand, the scene has diversified. In cities especially, electric and gas grills are on the rise, offering a smokeless, balcony-friendly alternative. So, what's sizzling on those grills? Unsurprisingly, bratwurst still reigns supreme, appearing on over 85% of German grills, followed closely by marinated pork steaks. But tastes are shifting. Poultry, fish, and vegetables are gaining ground, especially among urban and health-conscious eaters. Vegetarian and vegan options are booming too. Everything from tofu skewers to soy sausages and veggie burger patties. Even grillkäse, such as halloumi, has found a permanent spot on the roster. And then, of course, there's bread. Because in Germany, bread is never far. Whether it's herb baguettes, garlic loaves, or the beloved Stockbrot, which is basically bread dough wrapped around sticks and roasted over open flame, no grill evening is complete without it. The grill itself is almost a personality trait. Charcoal for purists, gas for convenience lovers, electricity for city dwellers. Then come the tools. Grill brushes, thermometers, long-handled tongs, and sometimes even full-on smokers. For true enthusiasts, grilling is a craft, not just a meal. Interestingly, grillen isn't quite the same as barbecue. While barbecue typically involves low and slow cooking, around 130 degrees Celsius, German grilling usually takes place at higher heat, quick, hot, and direct. While the act of cooking over fire goes back to humanity's earliest days, the rise of modern grill culture in Germany has more recent roots. After World War II, American soldiers stationed in Germany brought their backyard barbecue traditions with them. Germans took notice and over time made it their own. So, as the temperatures rise and the parks fill up, you can be sure, somewhere nearby, someone's firing up the grill.
We have with us Tuba. She has a silent G in between her name. So if I, by any chance, do it this on the wrong side of the narrative, please let me know. But first and foremost, dear Tuba, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. No worries. I think like the name thing, it's like, it's not that common name. So it's like easy, you know.
Where does your name come from?
The way it's written, T-U-G-B-A with the silent G, it's the Turkish way. So I'm half Turkish, half Greek. But actually the name comes from Arabic. But of course, like the Arabic pronunciation is a bit different. It's Toba. In Turkish, we say Tuba. There is also a city in Senegal that is after my name, actually. The city is called Toba as well. So it's like, it's written in the Quran as well. It's actually a tree in heaven.
That's a beautiful thing. And you grew up in Germany with half Turkish, half Greek family. And then you went to Berkeley.
So basically, my grandparents came as guest workers to Germany. So my dad's side and my mom's side. And my parents met in Germany, actually. So my mom is Greek, my dad is Turkish. And I was born and raised in Germany. And then when I was 21, I moved to the UK. So I actually studied in the UK. The Berkeley one is a bit confusing on my LinkedIn. It's because I did a two-year like mindfulness teacher training, but that was virtual. It was with Berkeley. But actually, for my bachelor's, I studied at Exeter University in the southwest of England. And then for my master's too, and then I moved to London. So yeah, basically 12 years I lived in the UK. Really long time.
So you basically have four different nations in you. You have the Greek nation, like the feeling of the, I'm going to say like Latin community, because the Greeks are also like very high. And again, me as a Latin, I'm always more into the Greek side of the world because I'm also very loud, but also Turkish people can be also very loud. Istanbul is very close by to Mexico City, to be honest, but you grew up in the quiet German part. And then you also then went to the UK. How has it been for you to kind of integrate those four nationalities, or at least the things that you have grown into, in one?
I haven't still, I would say. But I think, like, back to your question, my family is very Mediterranean. So like at home, it was a very Mediterranean environment. Of course, like in the school, but even in my small hometown, there was a huge, really big Turkish community, also Greek. So it wasn't like, I feel like when you go to the southern part of Germany, so I'm like originally from the northwest of Germany, between Bielefeld and Osnabrück, like Cologne, it's quite international, not as much as Berlin, but like it is. So I wouldn't say I grew up in a very German city. So there was definitely a lot of influence, but For sure, when I left the UK, it was meant to be only 8 months, but I had a lot of identity issues, for sure, and which kind of led me to write my first book now. So I'm writing my first book. I started last year, and it will be about identity and belonging, but like my personal story. So I wouldn't even say, you know, like, of course, like all these years, I always found a way to navigate. But I think I realized last year when I started writing my book, there is no end to navigating your identity, especially if you're a global person. I'm sure you'll agree with me because you also live in Germany. It's like this constant, because like especially like I lived 12 years in the UK. I also feel somehow I didn't grow up in the UK, but I feel very close to that culture as well. So it's like a constant navigation, even if you're not from that part of the world. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your storytelling.
I mean, I think I always like I now write on Substack. Substack is this online platform where you can have a newsletter. It's basically a bit similar than, I don't know, anyone that is my generation and older. Blogger.com used to be one of the first platforms, you know, where you could write online. And actually, I used to have a beauty and fashion blog. So I've always been a bit of a storyteller, but it was always like writing. So writing was my thing. But then when I joined the corporate world in London, I gave up and now I came back to it. Yeah, I mean, I think because I'm quite sensitive person, I'm very sensitive to my environment and I have a lot of reflections. And maybe it's my ancestors being philosophers, like the Greek philosophers, but I feel very philosophical about life sometimes. And I realized my newsletter is also more on the, it's called As Slow As Possible, but it's also more on the philosophical side of things. Like, you know, it's like these in-between moments in life that we sometimes don't notice, but there is more to it. And I like to tell these stories, things that I notice in my environment, in my day-to-day, but with a very philosophical aspect. Yeah.
And you were telling before we went to a music break that you are just finishing your book.
Yes.
And a little bit about it came from this experience of having this multinationality and also adapting to a new one. How long are you in the process? When can we read it?
So I've always wanted to write a book, but I never, I didn't know what will be the topic. I'm like, hopefully one day it will come to me. And then last year, before I turned 40, I had a bit of another, you know, not identity crisis, but I think it comes with like, you know, when you hit like 40, 50, 30. And then I was like, you know what? I have always wanted to learn Greek. I'm going to take some sabbatical from work. And I will go to Athens and I will do a language school. But then when I decided to do that, I'm like, why don't I just record every day my experiences? Because it felt a bit like when I went to Athens, even though I'm half Greek, I realized I'm not that connected to the culture. So it felt like being a foreigner in my native country. So that was like somehow the tagline that I had in my head nonstop. So what I did is like every day I recorded my experiences, things that happened at school, my own reflections, my family's history, but then also how it is to be half Turkish, half Greek, because as you know, they don't really get on that well. You know, that's another part of, you know, where sometimes I feel in conflict with my identity because it's like two countries that have a very shared and sometimes not so pleasant history. And yeah, so now I have the first draft and I actually like this week I started writing a book proposal. I just need to find an agent now and then hopefully find a publisher. But yeah, it's a lot like about identity and belonging, but not in a serious way. It's more mixed in with my experiences in Athens and funny, because I don't want it to be like a very serious book. But of course, you end up talking about serious things too.
I'm always saying that you have so many different identities in just one language, and then you add the other languages to it. Plus, as you say, the age, because the far along you are in a specific way, I sort of believe that, at least for women, when you get to a certain age, you're supposed to be doing something very specific. And then that all included, it's kind of like a blast, and you're thinking so many situations and your identity is changing so fast all the time that, of course, it's not very easy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what I realized when I started writing this book, I was reflecting a bit on it. You know, we're living in this world where globalization is like on full on speed. Like everyone is living everywhere. We're flying like for a weekend to Paris, to there, to this. But the human cost of this globalization, it's very slow. You know, humans can't catch up that fast with globalization when it comes to our emotions, when it comes to identity. And I realized even though we're all moving around, but emotionally, it's very difficult to catch up with it. Of course, it doesn't also make it any easier that there is a general trend, particularly in Europe and US, towards right-wing extremism. So like all of us who are not maybe native to the country, even expats, you're like, where do I even belong? Even though I have built a home in Germany and I've been living here for 10 years, but now I don't feel welcome here. But I also don't feel welcome in my home country anymore. So I think it's a general topic. It's not just, I don't feel like it's exclusive to me, but I don't think our emotions can catch up that fast as technology and globalization move around the world.
Definitely. Tuva, we were talking about globalization and how now more than ever, we sort of need this third place. Yet on the other side, we feel like brands are trying to get even more and more into the DMs. They're getting there where we have this one-to-one conversations. If we move slowly to this third places, to our small communities, do you think that that will change once again how we get advertising, how the brands communicate with us? Do you think that at any point we might just kind of go offline? Just really provoking thought here. Are we more looking forward to disconnection?
I think it's a combination, but like now there is this, I think it's called Offline Club. It's basically an organization that started in the Netherlands and now they organize events in Berlin as well. So there is clearly a need because I think since the pandemic, we're also a bit off balance. We're too much online, but too little. Like we lost a lot of the third spaces during the pandemic, I realized, really. Very, like unless someone takes up the initiative like I did with these meetups, very difficult, you know, to maybe find your own little community. But if you do find, like, if you take the initiative, I think we started off like with 10 writers. We're now 130 writers. So there is clearly a need for people to have these third spaces. But I mean, I also work in tech. I'm a firm believer, you know, it's all about balance. We need the online world and it's really useful. And I'm so grateful that we have the online world, but we also need these offline meetups, offline events and offline spaces where we, you know, what you were saying that you live in this parallel universe somehow, that you come back to what's happening now and what's happening in your city and in your community.
I mean, I'm coming with this, especially because that you work in a tech and you also have this power of writing and putting people together. And it's smaller than, let's say, any profile on Instagram, yet it's so much richer. But we've come from this massive media in the 80s where we had just three channels and brands just positioned themselves to millions and millions of people. And then it has been fragmented so much that nowadays an influencer has even more than any TV show visitors has. And on the other side, I do believe that this oversaturation of information, it's making us choose that third space with a little less people and even fragmented it even more, because sometimes it's just too much information happening all at once. And of course, the question will be how this is going to affect the way that we consume, because at the end of the day, a lot of the companies that we're working in have the need to get this massiveness, to get as many people as possible to get this message in the big NFL advertising segment. But is it possible that we will start, I don't know, branding ourselves more and getting maybe being influencers outside of Instagram?
I mean, I think the influencer model, I actually read a really good book from, I forgot the name now, but maybe we can link it in the show notes, about the influencer in the UK. I've been following her for years, but it's her own opinion about like how things have changed. I honestly don't think even the influencer model is working as well anymore, because people are craving smaller, more intimate spaces. And I think maybe this meetup, not just because it's offline, it's smaller and intimate and it feels a lot more real than one influencer preaching everyone what they should buy, what they should do. It feels like more like a community. And I feel like even the online world will change more and more. That's why, like, you know, Discord, I don't know, it's like this more community-driven app. There's so many different communities. I feel like even the online world will change. And I have no idea what it means for brands. I know they're trying also really hard. Like, some brands even started writing their newsletters on Substack because it's like easier to have a direct relationship with fans. But I don't know what it means, honestly. Also, like now with the introduction of AI, I think there will be a big change in also how brands target people. And I feel like a lot of us have become a lot cleverer. I don't fall anymore as much for brands or influencers. I unfollowed so many influencers where I felt like they're just trying to sell me something. So it's not even about like having 5 million followers. It's about like, you know, what kind of relationship you have with the people.
I'm on your side, definitely. It has maybe to do a little bit of our similar age. Of course, you're way younger than me. But also because Marlene, our producer, she's way younger. She's in the beginning of her 20s. And of course, the way that they consume, it's also, I think, even more offline than our generation. And so it's getting that way. And I believe that places like yours, the possibility that you give to authors is super valuable. And therefore, congratulations on this.
Thank you. I mean, honestly, when I look at it's not even my problem and my friends who are addicted to their phones, it's my parents. Like, you know, I feel like at least we have like over the years found a way. Like I'm 41 now and we're trying to find ways to be more offline, but my parents don't have a filter at all. Like, they're like all day on their phones. Like, even when we're traveling, when we were traveling and having dinner, I feel like that generation is totally lost to the online world. They need to figure out a way. And I've had other friends say the same, that it's actually their parents who are more addicted to their phones than, like, you know, their actual direct friends. So, but I hope, you know, more people will wake up, because, yeah, there needs to be a bit more balance between online and offline.
And we should definitely have more safe spaces like yours. It is important to build a community, and especially as someone who comes from another country, to have the ability to interact with like-minded people or someone who's not only about spinning or ballroom dancing, but also about their own talent. And it's super important to be part of something.
Yeah, definitely. I think like one biggest learning was for me, I've always been a bit of a networker, but the thing is, if someone takes initiative and you provide these spaces, people will come, because people are really starved, you know, to have these third spaces, to be part of a community. We really need it, because the online world, even if there are smaller sub-communities and on Reddit and everything, it's just not the same as like meeting one evening, having a drink with a person, you know, in a bookshop. It just feels a lot more real, and life feels also, you're a lot more present.
I need to turn off my cell phone. were in our last part of our conversation with Duba, I do have a lot of questions because we were talking about globalization and what you were saying about the emotions don't go as fast as the globalization goes, or even as Instagram goes. Because I think somehow as someone who is not 100% citizen of one country, because you have so many countries in yourself, that we are kind of the first generation that, I mean, at least since you can always take a look at what's happening in another country, you are always living in this parallel world between two countries. What's happening in Germany? What's happening in the UK? What's happening in Germany? What's happening in Mexico? So you never let go of something and you're feeling emotions all the time. And that can be sometimes very overwhelming. But here is the positive side, because when this overwhelm comes in, you have to access other tools such as storytelling and take the online presence off and go into very meetups offline, which is what you basically do here in Berlin.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. I feel like this online world gives us a lot, but it really, like, you know, this parallel, what you were saying, you know, parallel living between like what's happening around the world and what's happening. And I really realized, like, since I still, so I've been organizing these Substack writer meetups for more than a year now, I realized coming back offline, meeting in real life in your own little community, the life, like, the world feels a bit more manageable. It feels like, you know, I don't need to know what's happening in Brazil now, because like I am in my own little community and I'm here now, I'm present, and this is what really matters. So I've been organizing these meetups once a month, and just having this third space to always come back with all these writers who also live in my own community here in Berlin is again a reminder, like, you know, we really need more spaces, or like more these type of things where we remove ourselves from the online world and come back to our community and just be present with what's happening with our own close environment.
Can anyone come to your meetups?
So like it started off as like anyone that is writing on Substack, but like I was saying it last week in our meetup as well, Substack is just a platform. Today, maybe we're writing on Substack and next week we're writing on another platform. In general, kind of like the semi requirement is that you're a writer. Even if you don't write on Substack, you're more than welcome to join. Or if you're not writing yet, you're curious, you're more than welcome to join. But we just want to keep it like, you know, writer focused. But we always have in the meetup, like at least a handful of people who are curious or who want to write a book and they need this last push, who want to start a newsletter. So yeah, it's always an option. But yeah, that's where we are right now. And next week, we actually have our first picnic, meetup picnic. So hopefully the weather will be nice and we can have the picnic.
How can we subscribe to your Substack?
So my Substack is called As Slow As Possible. And it's basically Tuba Afci and then Substack. When you Google it, it should come up. It's my name and my surname. And usually, yeah, I share some of the events there and like follow-ups. And we also have a Telegram group. But if you find me on Substack, you can just DM me via Substack and then I can give you all the information.
Thank you so much for being with us today. And we hope to meet you very soon in one of your... I'm not a writer yet. But I hopefully will at some point in my life. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
So one question. When I was living in the UK, I got asked a lot, like a topic that came up a lot was like, why do Germans have two duvets? And yeah, I think the whole world is trying to make sense of this. Why anyone, any couple would not just have one duvet, but have two separate single duvets. And yeah, that's the question that I have that I still haven't figured out in my 41 years.
If you've ever checked into a hotel in Germany or stayed over at a German friend's place, you might have been surprised by the bed setup. One mattress, or sometimes even two pillows, and two separate duvets. For many international newcomers, it feels a bit unromantic. But for many Germans, it's simply the smartest way to sleep. Let's get the practical reason out of the way first. No one likes a blanket thief. Anyone who's woken up at 3 a.m. freezing on one side while their partner lies wrapped up like a warm burrito knows that shared covers are a battleground. The solution? Each person gets their own duvet. No fighting and no middle of the night tug of war. Just sleep. And it turns out this isn't just a quirky preference. It actually makes scientific sense. Studies have shown that people, especially women, tend to sleep more deeply and wake up more rested when they have their own sleep environment. That includes not just the mattress or pillow, but also the blanket. And in a country where people take their sleep and their ergonomics very seriously, this isn't something to take lightly. Interestingly, the double duvet setup is common not only in Germany, but across Scandinavia and parts of Austria and Switzerland. In fact, many German bedding stores don't even carry king-size duvets. Instead, they offer two single-sized ones with individual covers, fabrics, and even seasonal weights. One person can go all in on the fluffy winter down, while the other sticks to the breathable summer quilt. And no one has to compromise. And before you ask, no, this doesn't mean romance is dead. Germans just draw a clear line between Zweisamkeit, togetherness, and Durchschlafen, uninterrupted sleep. One is for evenings, the other for nights, and both deserve equal respect. Still skeptical? Well, think of it this way. If couples argue less about who's hugging the blanket or overheating in the bed, they might just have more energy and patience for actual quality time. That's not a step back in romance. It might actually be the secret to longevity. So, if you're moving here, don't panic when your partner suggests buying two comforters instead of one. It doesn't mean your relationship is in trouble. It just means you're about to sleep better. And in Germany, that's practically an act of love. That's it for this week's episode of Plus 49. A big thank you to Tuba for sharing her thoughts on identity, belonging, and how to slow down in a world that rarely lets us pause. As always, you can catch up on anything you missed over on our website, where you'll also find more stories, interviews, and resources for navigating life in Germany. We'll be back next week with more voices, questions, and discoveries from Berlin and beyond. Until then, enjoy the sunshine, share your duvet, or don't. And take it easy out there. Goodbye.